Hey, everybody. So glad to see you back again for the January 23rd edition of Project 4-4, where we're feeding ourselves from five pages of God's Word every day in chronological order. Now, this is a super fun adventure that we're on in the middle of Exodus at this point. And today, we begin talking about the 10 plagues. Now, tomorrow we'll talk about some of the 10 plagues in particular, but today we're going to be talking about from Exodus 5 through 7 and part of 8, the initial encounter with Pharaoh, and some of the broad strokes things that you should be picking up as you're taking a look at this text. So at this point, we need to remember that Moses is about 80 years old when all this is taking place. Stephen's speech in Acts chapter 7 gives us that information. And this is an amazing sight, really. I mean, two old guys, over 80 years old, standing in front of one of the most powerful kings in the world, asking for the freedom of their people to hold a three-day festival out in the wilderness. This is pretty exciting stuff. But Moses and Aaron are only revealing a part of their agenda. We know that their agenda is much bigger, but Pharaoh slams them down before they can get to the next stage, which just goes to show a bit about the intolerability of Pharaoh at this time. Well, it was Pharaoh's response to Moses that shapes the entire series of events to follow. You need to mark this question because it's so important. It's, who is the Lord that I should obey him? Moses, let my people go. Pharaoh, who is the Lord? Who is Yahweh? Who is Jehovah that I should follow him? Well, Jehovah's just about to show up and demonstrate to Pharaoh exactly who he is. Now, this is important because Pharaoh considered himself to be a god. And so it's kind of the battle of the gods. The official title of Pharaoh was Lord of the World. One of the names of God is the Lord of the heavens and the earth. And we're about to see in a shouting match, in a fighting match, about who is going to win. Well, Pharaoh wasn't the only god in Egypt. In fact, the religion of Egypt was one of the most complicated mixes of polytheistic confusion that you could imagine. Even to this day, we're not certain exactly how many gods existed, how many they worshipped. Most lists include about 80 known deities with overlapping characteristics and domains. But each of the plagues brought down by the hand of God was directed at one of these specific gods of Egypt, like Osiris, who was the god of the River Nile. And when the River Nile was turned into blood, well, Osiris's domain would have been attacked. And each of the plagues has a different god that is in mind when Moses is sending and when ultimately God is sending that particular plague. So this whole encounter is actually, all 10 plagues, a power encounter between God and the prince of darkness, between the God of Israel and the gods of Egypt. Now, one of the things you need to understand to properly process the information that we're giving you concerning this or any other power encounter is that the gods of Egypt were not nothing. What I mean is they were false gods. The Bible's consistent claim is that there's only one true God, but they weren't figments of somebody's imagination either. The gods of Egypt were real demonic beings who had real power. Enough power so that the magicians of Pharaoh's court could reproduce the initial miracles that flowed from the staff of Moses, though it was quite clear that their power was less strong than that of Moses. That's the point of the detail concerning the fact that Aaron's snake swallowed up the magician's staffs. It's like, my snake is bigger than your snake, so my God is bigger than your God. It's almost amusing that when Moses demonstrated the power of God by turning the Nile River to blood, the Pharaoh's magicians responded by doing more of the same, compounding rather than solving Pharaoh's problem. God allowed them to reproduce the miracle, but they couldn't reverse the miracle. The demons behind the religions of Egypt were real, but they had limited power, which was evidenced just as soon as the power of God began to be extended on behalf of his people. That teaches us a second thing about power encounters. They're likely to begin whenever the power of God is being advanced in dramatic ways. God is about to redeem Israel and establish the Mosaic covenant. And so you see a flurry of angels and demons and miracles and supernatural activities. That's why we see in the world today, in places where the gospel is going forward in dramatic ways, more likelihood of power encounters with angels and demons and miracles, and less so in an area where the good news, the witness of Jesus, is more firmly established. Let me make just one more comment, then I have to move on. When you encounter other religions and other gods, you may be certain that they're false, but don't quickly assume that they are nothing. There are very real spiritual forces that are at work in our world this day. I want you to notice with me that the instrument by which the miracles and the stories were produced is Moses' staff. Now watch for Moses' staff, because this becomes increasingly important. It's his regular old shepherd's staff that he was carrying around on the side of Mount Horeb. And on that day, when he stood in front of the burning bush in God's presence on Mount Horeb, which is also incidentally known as Mount Sinai, Moses had asked what to do when Pharaoh and the children of Israel said they didn't believe him. You remember that conversation, right? Moses, this is what you're supposed to do. What's in your hand? He's got a staff. What do I do with the staff? Throw it down.
Okay.
Moses throws down the staff, and then he quickly retreats to avoid the snake, which has now appeared. And God says, Moses, now pick up your staff. And Moses carefully does this just as the staff reappears. God says, if they question you, just do that. They'll be impressed. Here's the point that I'm making. It's real simple. God has a remarkable habit of taking whatever happens to be in our hands and using it in unbelievable, amazing ways. Moses' plain old staff, his walking staff, became the staff of God. And that's what it's actually going to be called a little bit later, because he obeyed God and let him use it. The question for us is pretty obvious today. What's in your hands? That if you give it over to God and use it for his purposes, it will become an amazing tool in his hands. Keep your eyes open for the mention of that staff as the story goes forward, and keep your eyes open for the things that God may have put in your hands that he wants to use for his purposes. This has been Mark Ashton with Project 4-4, reminding you that people don't live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God. May God's blessings be with you as you read every word in his Bible.